Will you bow down to the darkness? Or will you fight?
Back. Miss Amy is back with an all-new Living Way Out Here on the Survival Circle Network. Join Amy for an uplifting hour of fun on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday evenings at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Survival Circle.
The number of people looking to buy firearms is up nearly 50% compared to 2007, according to the FBI.
In the month of November, our gun sales were probably comfortably 250% of what an average month is.
All in favor of losing your rights? Please do nothing.
This rally is not about guns, but what these guns that everybody's going to wear represent is the true badge of a free man, that he can bear arms in defense of himself without permission from anyone, and that's what these arms represent.
Gun laws in the U.S. vary by state, and the amount of regulation is a hot-button political issue. It can't take me.
You have associated two U.S. senators and associating them or comparing them to terrorists. I said, well, they are.
Can't take me. Fill your hand, you son of a bitch.
You can't take me.
I don't like to brag, but we're kind of proud of that ragged old flag.
You see, we got a little hole in that flag there when Washington took the cross.
Does this country remind you of the America that you grew up in? Do your children enjoy the same freedoms that you did when you were young?
Do you think that you can take me on? You must be crazy. There ain't a single thing you've done that's gonna faze me.
Just how far are you willing to be pushed? When are we gonna put our collective foot down and tell the tyrant, get off of my back? Hi, I'm Cope Reynolds, and if you're tired of the same old sugar-coated mush-mouth monologue of talk radio, join me for The Shooting Bench, Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Central. Guns, self-defense, survival, current events are just a few of the topics that we'll discuss on The Shooting Bench, and we're going to start discussing them right now.
Have you forgotten?
Good evening, folks. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. It is the 27th of January. It's a Wednesday, and it was exactly to the day, to the hour, 19 weeks ago tonight that I had Lavoie Finicum on my show when he was still living, before he was murdered.
this. I thought I'd be on live tonight, but I forgot that I had a class I need to teach in a neighboring town. So I thought that the next best thing would be to air this interview that we had with Lavoie Finicum 19 weeks ago tonight, and help those that didn't know him or that missed this show to understand what a patriotic, knowledgeable, kind, gentle Christian man he was. And that what a tremendous travesty and tragedy this is, that he was murdered at the hands of jackbooted thugs outside of Burns, Oregon, last night, somewhere in the vicinity of 7 p.m. Pacific time. A lot of stuff has happened since then. First, before we start that, I have about a 10-minute soundbite that you must hear before we start into this. All right, and we're going to start that here right now.
Elvis had like a laser on us. They're like, drew out the car and put your hand out the window and all this stuff. He's like, he took his hand out the window so they could see he didn't have it. Then he's like, but I'm not. He's like, I'm not. He's like, we're going to talk to the sheriff right now. He's like, you guys can follow us there, that's fine. He's like, but we're talking to the sheriff. He's like, either you can put a bullet through my head right now and get it over with, or we're going to talk to the sheriff. And they were like, no. And so then they're like stepping it up, and a bunch more guys are coming out, and they're all pulling their guns out. And they were like, we have women in the car. We have, because it was me and this other lady in the car that I don't know real well. But anyways, we have women in the car. So they're saying, get the women out of the car. Get the women out of the car. And they're saying they're going to shoot. And Ryan Payne was like, he was in the front seat. Ryan Payne is amazing. He is incredible. But anyhow, so he was like, he said, he put his hand out the window because he was trying to talk to them. He was like, if he was, he wanted the guy to just, he was like, I don't know if it's worth it. He's like, so he put his hand out the window and he said, we have women in the car, at least let the women get out. And he stuck his head out and they shot at him, but they missed him. Or like, he ducked just in time. So they didn't hit him. And then they're like, oh, they mean business. They're going to shoot us. And so Ryan decided to get out of the car and try to go talk to them. And so he gets out of the car, and then the guy tried to, like, talk to them. The driver was like, I'm just going to drive. So I'm just going to talk to the sheriff. And he's like, so either shoot me now or leave us alone. And they were just like, turn the car off and put your hands up on it. So finally, he decided to just drive. So we all got down on the floorboard, and he took off, and then they started firing at us. They started shooting us a bunch of times, and then they had a roadblock set up, and so he ran into a snowbank, and they were, like, riddling the car with bullets. And then, they, like, when we crashed, they stopped for a second. He got out of the car, and he had his hands in the air. He's like, unless, he's like, just shoot me then. This is what you want, to shoot me. And they did. They shot him dead. They shot him, like, right there, because he was just walking with his hands in the air, and I saw it. I swear to God. He was just walking with his hands in the air. And they shot him. And they shot him dead, and then after he was down on the ground, they shot him three more times. And then they bombarded our vehicle with bullets. Ryan got hit in the shoulder. We were laying there on the floorboard screaming, and they gassed us, like, five times, and they kept trying to shoot us, and their angle was bad, so I don't know. We were praying, like, so hard, and we were screaming, like, stop, please, stop, please, stop. And they were just drilling us with the bullets. They kept gassing us over and over, and we couldn't breathe because of the gas. And we were trying to find something white so that we could put a white flag out. And then I was trying to see, because Ryan knew he got hit in the shoulder, so he was like, well, I don't think it's too bad, though. So we were just trying to find a way to get out there. And then they, hold on a second. I'm waiting for the call.
Listen, Victoria, I recorded your testimony.
Okay.
All right, because if anything happens to you, I think it's really important to have that.
All right.
Okay, so let's just get this clear. Mr. Finnicum's hands or Fincom hands were in the air when he was shot.
Yes.
Was he standing?
He was shown face up. His hands were still up after he was dead.
Okay, they shot him and he went down, then they shot him again on the ground?
Yeah, they shot him like at least six times.
The newspaper reports are just saying that three shots were fired, but that's not true.
No, are you kidding me? They shot at least 120 shots probably altogether.
Okay.
They were shooting the car, like a lot.
What side of the windows were the windows blown out on, the left or the right side?
Left.
Left side, okay. And
they kept hitting the right. They kept hitting the right side of the car too, but they didn't blow. Like the windows didn't come out. Like they were hitting the metal instead of the glass.
Okay. And so, not one shot was fired by anybody in the car or by a Lavoie.
No, no one even touched their gun.
No one touched their gun.
No one pulled their gun out. No one touched the gun. We had no rifles. A couple of the guys had sidearms on, but no one touched them. In fact, they had their hands out the windows to show that they were not firing. They weren't nothing.
Okay, so
we showed no aggression at all.
When Ryan Bundy was shot, both his hands were out the window and his head was out the window?
No, at the time he was on the floor of the car because that was when they were shooting at our vehicle. We couldn't get out of the car or we would have been dead.
Right, okay. And so how many police vehicles how many vehicles would you say were involved in this encounter? FBI vehicles, et cetera?
You know, I didn't count. I was really shooken up when they got out. But we all noted that there were, like, a ton of vehicles. There were, I don't know, maybe 40 altogether.
Okay.
There was tons. And there were people in the trees. Like, it was an ambush. It was a set-up ambush or something because there was, like, people in the trees, FBI snipers and people in the trees because we saw them. They're all pointing their, like, I had, like, 20 lasers on me when I was getting out of the car.
Okay. So Lloyd got out of the driver's seat and
when he crashed into the snowbank, then he immediately got out of the car. He had his hands in the air. He's like, just shoot me then, because he didn't want to go down. He just had his hands in the air. He's like, are you just going to shoot me? And then they just shot him.
And how many shots would you say that were fired when they shot him the first time?
The first time that he was shot?
When they shot him, did you hear multiple rounds?
Yes, I did. He got hit by several people. It was simultaneous, and we were like, what? Because we couldn't believe it. It shocked us, because he had his hands in the air. We couldn't believe that they were actually going to shoot him. And we were like, what? Is he dead? Is he dead? And then I was like, because we knew that he had gotten shot, we couldn't hear him, and I was like, then I screamed, I mean, he too late, come out and help him, I just want to help him. And then he started firing at the car, the vehicle, again. And then they wouldn't let us out. And, oh, it was so scary.
About how long would you say they fired at the car before they finally stopped?
Somewhere between 5 and 10 minutes.
Victoria, we're going to be praying for you, okay? I have this recorded because I fear for your life. I feel like you are one of the few people. You're not under arrest, but you are a witness, a direct eyewitness to what happened. So I wanted to get this down. And I wanted to document this as well as I could. Who was driving so Lavoie was driving the car and Ryan was in the front seat?
No, Ryan Payne was in the front seat, but during the incident, he got out when they first stopped us. He stopped in the middle of the road and told them, we're going to talk to the sheriff, he said. And then when they fired the first shot, it was actually at that point, Ryan had Ryan Painter bolted his hand out the window on his head, and then they shot at him.
That was the first shot.
That was the first shot.
Okay, so.
And that's when they knew that we, that, that's when we knew that they were meant business, that they were serious, and that they, I'm talking to someone in Michigan that I lived with, because recording this, just in case, so that was the first shot, and then he ended up getting out of the car, because they stopped shooting, he got out of the car, and then after we started driving again, that's when they shot, that's when they started shooting at us again. So, but we had lasers on us the whole time, and they were ready to shoot.
Okay, so Ryan got out of the car, did he ever get back in the car before he took off?
No, he was arrested, or he was taken into custody at least, I don't know if he was arrested, because all of us were, taken into custody, and he was with us. Like, we all got transported together, and then they separated all of us.
And that's Ryan Payne you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay, and where was Ryan Bundy?
He was in the back seat of the car beside me. I was actually, I had fallen asleep on him. I had fallen asleep on him right when we got pulled over. I was asleep, and then I woke up when the whole thing started going down.
So you were
sitting to the left of me.
Okay, so you were in the middle?
Yes.
And then the
Shauna
other lady?
Shauna Cox on my right.
Who was?
Shauna Cox.
Shauna Cox on your right, Ryan Bundy on your left. And yes. You were headed to go see the sheriff?
We were going to this meeting that we were that was going on. So all of us sheriffs were going to sing, and the sheriff was going to be there, and a bunch of ranchers. We were just going to try to talk and maybe do some negotiations, and we were going to sing. And so that was all. And then we were ambushed. I mean, it was known that we were going to go, so they probably just decided to choose that area maybe because it was really wooded and everything, and we didn't have any phone service. So.
Okay. All right, well, listen, I'm going to be up if you want to call me at any time during this, okay? Because I can't do much. I can pray for you guys, but I can also try to document as best as possible to make sure that the story is not... Because right now, the media is reporting that 3 shots were fired.
No, that's a total lie.
Okay.
Of course, the media is going to report that, but...
Right, well...
Are you kidding me? Have you seen the car? Have you seen the vehicle?
No.
It's completely covered with gunshots.
Well, no, they're not going to release that because they don't want. They don't want.
And he's probably got 6 holes in himself.
Okay. Well, I'm just telling you. So, now let me ask you this: do you want this story to get out?
Absolutely.
Okay. So I'm gonna stop the recording and I'm gonna see how well it's turning out. I want to be able to determine if I can hear you clearly.
Okay, so there you have an eyewitness report of LaVoy Finicum's murder. Now let's go on with the interview here. Enjoy and see what a fine, fine man this was. He was the best of all of us, no question about it. There we go. All right, here we are. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. It's the 16th of September. It's a Wednesday. We're starting a little earlier tonight. We got good reason to. We got a special guest coming on tonight. And normally we have with Boy Scout obligations and everything else, we usually do at 8:30 on Wednesdays. So I hope everybody got caught up with all my notices there and made it into the show in time. We're going to stall just a little bit here, make sure that we get as many people in as we can. We've got, let me start out first. Yeah, boy, I see some good names in there. Some folks we don't see too often. Blue Streak, the Hunter. That's Bill Cuba. Let's see who else we got. We've got a bunch of the regulars, and we appreciate all of you coming in there for sure. Looking for some of the newer ones. There's a whole pot full of anonymous in there. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's about a dozen or so anonymous in there. All right. Well, good deal. Looks like everybody that counts is here, so we'll get started here. The Restoring America's Heritage Arms Expo is looking better than we had expected it to. Everything's looking real good. I went into the building yesterday and looked at it, and the way we've got it set up in there, everything is going to be inside except for a few of the demonstrations that need to be outside, and one of those is a couple of blacksmiths that we have coming, so they'll obviously be outside. But we've got plenty of room, 8,000 square feet, to keep everybody inside. We're going to have plenty of room for lots of vendors. I don't know. I think the hunter's going to be hunting that weekend. He's not going to be able to make it in there. That's too bad. You're going to miss out on a good show. I tell you what, we found out today, and is B2 Basic in there? Let me see here. Where is Tampico? Okay, Tampico Scout's in there. We found out today that that's also the weekend of the last soccer game for the area. And wouldn't you know it, we're going to be, the building that we have is right next door to the soccer field. I'm telling you, there are going to be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people walking by there. So we're looking at a good turnout at this Arms Expo. Now, for those of you that are not familiar with the Arms Expo, especially all these new names I'm seeing in there, I did this once before, back in 2013. I did what was probably the first ever in the history of the ATF, anyway, at least since the 1964 Gun Control Act, or 68, I mean. We held a all-private gun show. No dealers allowed, no all-private transactions. Buy, sell, and trade as you want. If you want to follow the laws, it's up to you. We're not there to police you. All we're there is to make sure that if we feel like there's any, you know, obvious people on dope heads or something in there, we're not going to risk anybody's lives over this. But other than that, everything was a fair game. Yeah, it was very well attended. We had little advertising. It was a spur-of-the-moment type thing, and I said, let's just do it. And over 2 days, we had about 500 or 600 people show up in there. It was a great turnout. And so we're doing this now. We've got the Chamber of Commerce on board with us. They're supporting it. They're going to advertise for us. We've got the soccer outfit. I've got one of I want to say vicious, but that's the only thing that comes to mind. The gal that has the probably the largest mailing list and the most active marketing source probably in the state of Arizona. Amazing woman. And she's on board with it. Matter of fact, we're getting the building from her, so it kind of limits some of my options there. But anyway, it's going to turn out to, there's going to be some training available in there. We're going to have speakers. We're going to have Sheriff Mack in there. We're going to have Heather Scott, representative from Idaho. We're going to have Matt Shea, representative from Washington. And we're trying to get a couple other people from here locally. And we're also going to have a guy named Lavoie Finicum in there speaking to us. An amazing, hardcore constitutionalist. And believe it or not, Lavoie Finicum is sitting right here in the shooting bench studio with us tonight. Lavoie, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing wonderful, Mr. Reynolds. It's an honor. Cope, it's an honor to be here. You have a beautiful place here. I've just been enjoying sitting here visiting with you, and it's been wonderful. Thanks for inviting me here.
You bet. Thank you for coming. The honor is ours, for sure. We've had somebody, and I don't remember who it was, that sent me the first video, and I said, what? I said, this is Bundy Ranch all over again. So it was only... It was only a matter of a couple of days after I watched and made sure that I was, you know, did my due diligence to check some of your other videos and see what was going on, that I gave you a call or left you the message to call me and try to touch base with you and let you know that we're there for you. And that's what with the whole show tonight, and we may even run overtime if we need to. I don't have any problem with that because we don't have anybody following us, so we can talk about this as long as you want to.
Wonderful. First thing I'd like to say, Coop, is I need to express some appreciation to you. I haven't done that, and I want to say thanks for having our sixes at the Bundy Ranch.
Absolutely. And we've got several other people on the chat room here that were there with me, too.
Yeah, and so all of you that was there, I don't know, maybe just to give some of your listeners a little bit of background of who I am and what I'm about, is I'm actually a friend of Clive and Bundy's. I'm on the Arizona side of the border. I'm a rancher in northern Arizona. And Cliven is on the Nevada side of the border. And just to kind of let you know, this will be a little bit of a repeat of some of the things I've told you, but
that's all right. That's good. That gives me an idea. Oh, by the way, before we get carried away with that, do you know a gal named Thera Lynn?
No, I don't. I should probably.
Anyway, she's your daughter.
Oh, Thera.
Thera Lynn.
Oh, Thera Lynn. Yeah, is she on board there?
Yep, she'd come in to listen to you.
Hi, daughter. She, let me tell you, the reason why you have kids is so that you're a hero.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, I think all my kids make me feel good. They all think I'm something special, and it's because of them that I live for.
Yeah.
So, hi, Thera. But I just kind of give you, your listeners, kind of a background is that, you know, I've been watching Cliven for years as he struggled with the BLM as they've sought to take his ranch away from him. And so I've known him longer than he's known me because I've watched across the border and he's just a little bit older than me, not much. And I've been interested to see if this man would stand. And as I was telling you, is that he had several run-ins over the 20 years period of time as they've tried to move him off his ranch. And anyway, I was sitting in a little meeting after church, and happened to have a brand inspector was in that meeting, and he just mentioned to me, he says, you know, they're gathering up Cliven's cows, and I, what? They're gathering up Cliven's cows, and he says, yeah, they're starting to gather up his cows, and this isn't the first time they tried to do it, but for now it was for real. And so I just got up off that meeting. I walked across the street to a mutual rancher by the name of David Johnson, who's a good friend of Cliven's. And I sat down with him. I said, David, I hear that they're gathering Cliven's cows. And he says, yeah, they're starting to gather his cows. I said, well, so and this was the question that I asked him, because this is what I really needed to know. I said, David, will Cliven stand or will he fold when this pressure comes? And he said to me, he said, LaVoy, I've never known Cliven to back down from anything. And so I had to ask the next question. He says, well, David, what are we going to do? He says, well, I don't know what we're going to do. I says, you know, if we go down there, we might not come back. And at this point, we didn't know that anybody was going to show up. We figured he was just down there all by himself. And nobody was going to help him. And I was so upset that, you know, that day. There's actually a week passed by that, and I says, nobody's going to come and help him. Nobody's going to help him. And as I says, what am I going to do? And I got a call from my daughter, clear down in Prescott. It says, Dad, says, I'm going up to the Bundy Ranch. I didn't even know she knew about
really?
It. Really? Yeah, and I go, you are? She says, yeah, I'm going up there. I said, well, how do you know about it? I said, well, we've been hearing this stuff. And I said, well,
how do you not know about
yeah,
it?
And so I and this is before the standoff. You know, I'd gone down there the week before where they had the big rally where they hosted the flags and there's some speeches and stuff, and then everybody left, and I had appointments and obligations up in Salt Lake, and I drove up there, and all that night, the pressure just really rested on me, Coop, and then my daughter called me that night, and I says, I'm coming. And so I came down, I drove down, and that was the first time I actually met Cliven, even though I'd been watching him for years. And I shook his hand, I says, Cliven, I says, that evening, I says, Cliven, you can't let him take your cows. And he says, well, Mr. Finnicum, be here in the morning with your horse. And so I went back to my ranch, and I got up really early, dark 30, and I jumped in my horse, and I drove down there. And as I was coming in, it was just starting to get light. And I actually didn't go through the I-15 there. I went around over Utah Hill because I was afraid they might try to. I didn't have a haul permit for my horse, and I didn't want to get stopped at the port. So anyway, I took an extra hour to
Coggins test on it.
Yeah, I didn't have that. So I said, I'm going to take the extra hour and go up and over the Utah Hill. And so I'm coming in, it's just as it's starting to get daylight, and I see the SWAT teams, the SWAT vehicles coming in from Vegas. So I already knew that the Federal Rangers were there, about 200 of them, but I see the extra SWAT teams coming in. And anyway, so I saddle up. I'm the first cowboy there, and I see all the militia, everybody's already there. But the cowboys are starting to come from different parts of the country, and I'm sitting there watching them. And I'm not really mingling with them. I'm just sitting on my red roan there, and I just kind of like to sit and watch and get the feel of people. And they're all talking with each other. There's different cowboys talking to each other. And there's a particular cowboy that's talking to you there that seemed to put himself in front of the cameras. Had the big, long handlebar mustache.
He was always one of them.
Yeah, just poking a lot of holes in the air with his finger. Had a big slouch hat on, nice truck, nice rig, and horses. And he is there in front of the cameras, in front of the reporters, and helping to make all these flags and stuff. And anyway, as I'm watching this, my fear is this, Cooper. My fear was that, you know, there's that bridge that we rode across to where the staging area was.
Yeah.
My fear was this, is that
right.
We're all going to get on our horses, and all us cowboys were going to do a horse and pony show and march across this bridge, and we're going to line up, and we're going to have a big speech, and then we're just going to go home, and they're going to load up his cows, and they're going to leave. And so anyway, as you've seen those videos, that we rode up on top there, and anyway, we're sitting there listening to Cliven talk. And as Cliven talks, he starts talking about action, about doing something. And this poor cowboy that was so vehement about the overreach of the federal government that we can't stand for this, he starts getting worried, okay? And he's sitting right next to me. And anyway, as Cliven starts talking about going and doing something, he starts hollering down from the hill. And Cliven can't hear him, but he's sitting right next to me. He says, Cliven, you can't talk like that. And then Cliven says something else. Cliven, don't do that. Somebody's going to get hurt. We'll beat them at the polls, Cliven.
Oh, shut up.
Cliven, we'll vote them out. And the poor guy's just getting more and more worried. And so I kind of want to ease his worry a little bit. So I lean over on my horse. I tap him on the shoulder. I say, it's okay. It's okay. We all die. Let's die for something. And the poor guy, I struck a nerve, and he got off his horse. He led his horse down to the end of the thing, and when we rode off, he went the other way. And the reason why I share that is that it's easy for people to talk, and we've had a lot of talk in our country for a long time, and sometimes I wonder how much courage do we really have? You know, we truly have been the land of the free, because we were the home of the brave. And at the moment when this person had the opportunity to actually act, he went the other way.
See a lot of that.
Yeah, and so I felt bad for him. And the problem is that when the day was carried, now he has to live with himself that he didn't, after all that talking, he didn't stand.
Well, you're a better man than me, because I don't feel bad for him. I should, but I don't.
Well, I don't even know if he could stay living in the community where he lived at. I mean, if I was him, I'd have to pack up and move and get a new name and start over again.
I don't know how you stand upright with no spine.
Yeah,
I've determined that the biggest problem with everything that's going on here is a major birth defect, and that's the men that are born with no testicles and no spine.
That's it. We will not be the land of the free if we're not going to be brave.
Yep.
If we cease to be brave and virtuous, we will not stand. Well, anyway, there's a couple of things I wanted to share with your listeners, and to you in particular. One thing that I mentioned is that there was three things that I felt that carried that day. The first one was that there was a man that had courage, and that was Cliven Bundy. And the thing that I've learned is Clive and I have become pretty good friends. We've spent a lot of time with. I've actually spent 3 hours yesterday with him down in Mesquite. And one of the things that he's kind of taught me, he says that God can't stand with a a man until the man stands. And so God is waiting for us to stand. And there's actually a scripture that I like in the Old Testament. A prophet comes to a king by name of Asaph, and he's kind of braiding the prophet for making some choices that didn't show courage. And he says this to the king. He says, "The eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to shew himself strong in behalf of them whose heart is perfect." And so here you had a man, just a simple rancher. He's just a common man like anybody else, but had the courage to stand up. And at that moment, that when he stands, God could stand with him. And then the other thing is that people could stand with him. You know, nobody can stand with you until you stand. So the first thing that helped carry the day, this is just my perspective of it, is that you had first a man with courage to stand. And then the second thing is that I believe that there was divine providence. One of the things that most people didn't see, and it was never on the news, you know, we were painted pretty poorly, and even by somebody that I'd respected for a long time, by the name of Glenn Beck, we were painted as a bunch of people trying to pick a fight and just trying to rub the nose of somebody. And what they didn't notice is when all of us cowboys rode off that day, and we got over the hill where nobody could see us. There's no media. There's nobody there. Those Bundy boys, they said, "Let's stop." And so we stopped, and he says, "Let's say a prayer." And so they called on somebody to say a prayer, and then after he said a prayer, the Bundy boys, they said this. He says, "Now listen, let us conduct ourselves in an honorable fashion, in an honorable way. We'll ride in there in a calm manner. We won't go in there hooting and holler. We won't be catcalling. We'll go in there with resolution and determination, but in an honorable way." And so when we rode in there, you know, it was actually a very peculiar feeling. I've never experienced quite that feeling, is that when we were coming down, and just before, as you know, before you turn and go under that first underpass, you know, where we finally lined up between the two freeways, and they're on the north underpass, but as we turn that south underpass, you know, everybody's hollering at us. It's like, "They got SWAT. They're all, you know," and they're all these people that are saying, "You got to be careful." And I said, "Yeah, I know. I've seen that." But I didn't see any fear on any of those cowboys that were there. And as we rode under there, there was a feeling that I've never quite experienced before. Very peculiar. And I don't know quite exactly how to explain it. So the second thing that I feel that helped carry the day is I really believe that the hand of providence was over the whole thing. To me and to about everybody that's there, it was a spiritual experience in a lot of ways. And the third thing that I think helped carry that day was the Second Amendment. There were armed American citizens to our back.
Mm-hmm.
And had there not been armed American citizens to our back,
hundreds,
they would have just laughed at us. I mean, you know, they had enough zip ties, and those handful of cowboys weren't going to do anything. But because there was the Second Amendment, at that point, those three things combined, and at that point, the greatest earthly power upon the earth is our federal government. I mean, I know China and Russia has given them a run for their money, maybe, but still, the federal government is the most powerful force upon earthly power upon the earth. And they were back down. They blinked. And so that was kind of my experience of it, of that day. But my concern was also that as I listened, is that so many people were there and supporting it, but they didn't really understand the principles of what Cliven was standing on.
Yeah.
Yeah. They could just see that there was a government overreach. But they really couldn't understand or articulate. You know, the most common thing is, well, I should have paid his taxes. You know, well, I should have paid this. And there's no taxes to pay. And so people don't understand it. And so I'd like to try to take a little bit of time, you know, Coop, and you can direct me in different directions.
No, you can take as much time as you want. Okay. Yeah, it's people, we come here to hear you.
So. Okay. Well, I want to take a moment and try to explain a little bit about what a grazing right is and how a property right is established. And if I could do that for a minute.
Please.
One of the things that we all understand as people, we understand lines, don't we? You know, we have to stand in line at the DMV, we stand in line in the grocery store, we stand in line in the theater. Well, there's three things that have to happen to create a property right. Well, the first thing is that when we have to claim it, and so when a person stands in line, what does he do? he creates a claim. If I'm the first one in line at a theater, I have now established a claim. I'm claiming that I have a right to be here. It's called natural or self-evident. We can see that a person has that right. He was there first. And the way Cliven explains it, it's a preemptive right, or the legal term is prior appropriation. And so that's the first thing to create this property right or this grazing right. The second thing is that you have to have continuous use of it. You must use it. You know, for example, if I'm in line and at the theater and it gets really long and I get tired of waiting, I want to go get a drink and a hamburger, and I step out of line to go get my hamburger, what's happened to my right? I've lost it. Mm-hmm. I've stepped out of line because yep. I didn't have continuous use of it. God intends for his earth to be used. And so if I step out of that line, I've given up that right. I can't come back in a half hour later, lines a mile down the block, and say, hey, I'm first in line. I don't have that. And we all know this. This is simple to see. We learn this as kids, don't we? I'm first in line. We all knew that. You know?
Yeah, no cuts.
Yeah, no cuts. Yeah, that's just no cuts. Now, the third thing to establish a property right is you must defend it. And we know about that, no cuts. So if I'm standing there, and I'm a small guy and a small man maybe, and a big guy comes in and says, I am just not going to wait in the back of this line, and he says, I'm going to push you in front of me. Well, what happens? If that guy steps in front of me, I can do one of two things. I can step back and mumble and complain, and by doing so, and do nothing. And in that case, what have I done with my right?
Give him up.
I've given him up. Or I can fight and defend my right. See, Thomas Jefferson taught that we only have those rights that we defend.
Mm-hmm.
So the three things to create a property right or create these rights, you must claim it, you must use it, and you must defend it. And so in particular, and I'll dwell on this because this is what's probably going to come to a head again, is that these grazing rights is how these were established. For example, our ancestors came in here. Like Cliven's ancestors, 150, 180 years ago, they came here. Nobody else is here. And they say, I've got a few cows. Here's some water. I'm going to claim this as my grazing right. Self-evident, you know. And prior appropriation. That's how it's established. Well, when the other ranchers come in, they have to go to another place. They have to develop another spring or develop another reservoir. And so a lot of times, bigger ranchers would come in and they'd say, you know, I'm a bigger rancher and I'm going to take this water hole even though I'm not the first one. And so what we had was range wars. You know, what do we call this going off Muggy Own Rim here? Bloody Basin?
Mm-hmm.
That was range wars. And so we did a lot of fighting and shooting sometimes to help establish our rights. But pretty soon we got civil and we actually now pretty much have fence lines down all these grazing rights. And so we take these grazing rights and we actually record them. Part of claiming it, we actually go to the county seat and record them. And so they're recorded in the county recorder's office. And nowhere do we get these grazing rights from the federal government. So you see how these are preemptive right or a prior appropriation.
Mm-hmm.
Long before the BLM ever existed, these rights were established. Now, in my case, my ancestor, I didn't get mine. I wasn't there first. I bought it from a ranching family by the name of Ballards. Okay, and the Ballards bought it from the Heatons. And the Heatons were some of the first settlers out there on the Arizona Strip. And when they came, there was nobody grazing out there. Now, the Indians weren't even grazing out there. There's nobody grazing out there. Okay, and so they established these rights by prior appropriation. So people need to understand that this is a personal property right, just like your car, your home. So Cliven wasn't a freeloader. Are you a freeloader in your home? No, you're not a freeloader in your home. You know, you didn't buy your home from the government. So in 1935, the federal government comes in and they pass what's called the Taylor Grazing Act, wherein they say, all these grazing rights now belong to us. And they turn around and say, now, you ranchers, we now permit you to ranch here. So they take them and they turn around and permit us to have them. And they say, and we will reexamine this every 10 years to see if we want you here. And besides that, any time in those 10 years, we can decide. Now, a lot of times people say, well, what's wrong with that? Well,
what's wrong with that? What do you mean, what's wrong with that? Yeah. How does a group of people come in and start a club with the, with letters for a name, and they say, okay, there's several of us here, and we're going to start this club, and now they say, okay, all this land that you've been on for 150 years, now you're going to pay us to graze on. How stupid is that?
Exactly.
What do you mean, what's the problem?
Yeah.
It's amazing to me what people think of that.
Now, they came in very softly. That's the way government always does. When they begin to expand, you know, we're going to help you. You know, we can help you roll out 10 miles of water line here. And, and as ranchers, you know, we're responsible. We're negligent. So, oh, yeah, you're going to help me run in some water line here. I can't afford to do that. And
so we
began to work hand in hand with this. Now, the problem with this, Coop, is that our founding fathers really wanted to make sure that we had a free country. So what did they do? They divided the powers through the three branches of government, the executive, the legislative, and the judicial. So they divided all three branches of power. Well, what has happened is the federal government, upon these lands that they claim are now theirs, they have combined all three branches of power. And let me explain. And it's gone clear to the Supreme Court. And the wording is this. It says that we have exclusive legislative powers whatsoever upon these lands. Now, let me give you an idea of what we're looking at in landmass. Do you think, let's compare it to some European countries. If we were to start with Germany, do you think the land that they control with this complete power is greater or smaller than Germany?
Smaller. I mean, it's greater.
It's greater.
It's a lot greater.
Yeah, you're going to have to start.
10 times.
You're going to have to throw in France. You're going to have to throw in Spain. You're going to have to throw in Portugal. And you're going to have to throw in Britain. You're going to have to throw in all these nations to begin to compare with the size of the land that the federal government is claiming they own. And now, the seriousness of this is that upon one, and it's one third of our nation, is under this rule. And upon this nation, it's, what has happened is an empire has risen up within our country. And upon this nation, they say, we can make the law, we can enforce the law, and we can adjudicate the law. And let me explain this. Just a bureaucrat behind the desk can write a regulation that has the force and effect of law. And then it goes out, and it's enforced by federal rangers. Now, and they're armed, and they're empowered to enforce these regulations by lethal force if necessary. And if a person gets contrary with one of these regulations, where are they hauled into? They're hauled into a federal court. And so all three branches of power are combined under one head. And none of these people, Coop, do we elect that rule over us. We have no representation. We have no power of recall. Now, the vast amount of the population, they live on the West Coast, the East Coast, and they don't know what it's like here, that this power exists combined under one head. And so it's repugnant to both the letter and the spirit of the Constitution. And people say, well, that's not true. It's gone clear to the Supreme Court. They have the power to do that. And so you have to ask yourself this question, and the question is simple, and the line is clear. The question is this: does the federal government own one-third of America, or do they not?
They do not.
That's right. They claim that they do, and it's gone clear to the Supreme Court. So what Thomas Jefferson also taught, as he got older in 1980 or 1820, he actually wrote this. He said, to consider the Supreme Court to be the sole arbiter of all constitutional questions is a dangerous doctrine and will lead to the despotism of an oligarchy. And that's what's happened. We have five men in black, just a simple majority, that determine what is a right and what isn't a right. But see, these grazing rights are natural. These grazing rights exist sole and separate from any written law. They're self-evident. That's the way our framers put it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Constitution just codifies and protects a man in his rights. So people say, well, where does it violate the Constitution? And so that's where we try to educate. You need to look at Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17. And in this clause, the framers laid out exactly what land the federal government could own and control. Because if you can control the land, you can control the people. You control the wealth, you control the food production, and you control the people. So they wanted that power to be left to the people and not brought into a central head. So they spelled out exactly what lands they could own. And in it, they say they can have the 10 square miles for the seat of the government, which is Washington, D.C. And other than that, they can have only those lands that they purchase from the consent of the legislatures of individual states. So nowhere did they purchase any of these BLM lands, did they purchase it from any of these states. There's no bill of sale. And not only that, they specifically say that these lands can only be for forts, docks, arsenals, and magazines and other such needful buildings. In other words, just for the defense of our nation. Now that's the proper role of a federal government, mm-hmm. is it not?
That is exactly right.
To defend our nation, defend our borders. And so you may have, with the consent of the legislature of an individual state, they couldn't even seize these things by eminent domain. They had to go hat in hand and say to the state of Nevada or any state, say, we need an Air Force base here. Will you sell us this land? They had to ask. So in that very clause, in that very section of the Constitution, we see that the lands belong to the states. And see, and when you look at a map starting back east, you see that this is what happened. And, you know, the beginning states, they as they came into the territory, they were admitted on what's called equal footing. The Northwest Ordinance was how they dealt with these Western territories. And in it, they said that all states coming into the Union were to come in on equal footing. That meant, at the moment of statehood, at that very moment, that the lands were to be disposed of and became property of that state. Well, as you know, the first few states, that happened that way. But then when you get to Ohio and stuff, they begin to hold the lands and not dispose them at that moment of statehood. And they started to say, and said, well, you know, there's this Revolutionary War debt that we have, and so we're going to dispose of it and help retire some of this war debt. And so they started disposing of it slower and slower. But they did dispose of it. All the Western states received their lands. And then under Andrew Jackson, we're completely out of debt. War debt's retired. And so even at that point, after that, all states at the moment of statehood should have received these lands. But as governments are wont to do, they like to hold on to power. They like to hold on to wealth. It's human nature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard to let go of power. It's hard to let go of wealth. It's hard to find George Washington's all over the place in government. And so what's happened is they move east, westward. They see this wealth, and they begin to more slowly dispose of land. And then some of the states in the Midwest start taking the federal government to court, saying, dispose of the land, give it to us. And they did, until finally they said, no, it's ours. You cannot have it. And that's where we're at right now. So illegally, the federal government has seized a third of our nation. And under this third of this nation, they rule with complete authority. We fought a revolutionary war over this very issue. And so that's what the Bundy thing was all about, was upholding the Constitution. It's not about cows. It's not about grazing. It's about freedom. And it's about liberty. And it's about upholding the Constitution. So a lot of people didn't really understand that.
And you say they got a third of the nation, but people that third of the nation, the biggest part of it's on this side of the Mississippi.
Oh, absolutely.
So if you cut the nation in half, they've got half of it. At least half of it.
And people, because they live mostly in cities and they live mostly on East Coast and West Coast, they don't understand what has risen up within in our country. And they don't understand the amount of wealth that is controlled there. You see, Coop out there on the Arizona Strip where I run my ranch is some of the richest uranium deposits in all the world.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little town there called Fredonia. And
yep.
At one time, it was a really up-and-coming town. You had a vibrant logging industry, which is now just a shadow of what it used to be.
Yeah.
You actually had an oil refinery. And then you had this mining exploratory industry that was there. And so everybody who wanted to work had a job. And the school had money for the school, and the school was growing. You know, three generations of my family's gone to that school. My dad started the first football team there, six-man football. that's how big the town is. And so, but what happened, so the federal government comes in, and with the stroke of a pen, they say, no more mining. Where did we vote up on that? Where did we have representation with that? They say that this wealth, this mineral right, is theirs. Where did they buy that from the state of Arizona? Nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere. But they have just claimed and seized all those mineral rights. And so now, then through EPA and other efforts, they closed down the oil refinery. They closed down the mining. They closed down the exploratory, and the logging is small. And so what happens? A man who's out there, you know, busting his butt on a drill rig, logging in the forest. What does that do to a man? It builds his character. You know, he comes home at night and he's done a hard day's work and he feels good about putting, you know, a roof over his family's head and food on the table. And so the character of the man is built. But when the government comes in and begins to take out the industry of the citizens, and then they turn around and they start handing out this welfare. So, well, we will help you here. Take a little bit of this. And that begins to destroy the character of a man. And so it is oppressive, Coop. These things that people understand is that it is an oppression. And so now that kind of brings the current to where I'm at.
All right. Before we get started on that, how about let's take a little break? I think okay. This is going to be a long night.
Okay.
We may be here. We're going to be here probably way more than our hour, which is fine. We don't have anybody following us, so
all right.
Feel free to talk as long. I think we've got a pretty captivated audience here, so I don't think anybody's going anywhere. So let's take a little break, and then we'll come
Excellent.
Back.
Excellent.
Let's take a good long break so we can do whatever we need to do.
You must figure you're a real dangerous man.
My name is John Q. Public, and I am a member in good standing of an organization called America, and I have a message for those agencies and agents that work under the auspices of the Department of Justice. You have called me many things in the past, rebel, right-wing extremist, domestic terrorist, to name a few, but that is not important. What I'm about to tell you is... There must be accountability in all things, sooner or later. When you sin, however big or small, you will be held accountable, either in this life or the next. When you invade people's privacy, violate their rights, steal property, break up families, and hurt people, the time is fast approaching that you will be held accountable both in this life and the next. You and I took the same oath, administered by the same people. We both swore to protect the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Some of you actually feel that you honor that oath, but you violate it each time you force a young girl to her bedroom floor in nothing but her underwear and hold her there at gunpoint. Or when you shoot or stomp a family pet to death, or shoot a young boy down in cold blood in the mountains of Idaho, or incinerate over 70 innocent people in a church in Texas. Warriors, indeed. How dare you call me a domestic terrorist? I go to work every day, sometimes at two jobs to make ends meet. I attend church every Sunday that I'm not working. As difficult as it is, I try to make time each day for my kids. I teach them about the Constitution and the Golden Rule. I have extra food and supplies to help myself and others through hard times. I try as hard as I can to obey the ever-increasing number of laws that are forced upon us, and I pay my fair share of taxes. I have a gun to protect myself and my family against those who would do us harm. I shouldn't have to use it to protect us against you. In fact, your organization is not even authorized by the Constitution and shouldn't be here, but since you are here, let's talk about your job description and performance. We have common enemies, you and I, that we should be united in fighting. The Founding Fathers never intended for us to fight each other. We should be as one. The current us-against-them attitude should never have been allowed to rear its ugly head. Division is unhealthy for the country. You will undoubtedly conduct more unconstitutional invasions of homes and businesses, and more innocent people will be injured or killed. A dairy in Pennsylvania, a rabbit grower in Kansas, a gun shop in New Mexico. It may even be me and my family. But let me make one thing abundantly clear. We, the people, have grown weary of living in fear. We're tired of being treated like animals. If you continue to follow the path that you are on, the time may come when you will not find us waiting to be descended upon when we least expect it. We may come to you. We outnumber you 1,000 to 1, and the same people that trained you trained many of us. We, the people, are becoming aware of those numbers. One day, you will launch one of your cowardly sneak attacks on an unsuspecting young family in Idaho, and instead of your brave sniper finding a defenseless, unarmed woman holding a baby in her arms, he may find that the tables have been turned. One day, instead of terrorizing and destroying another American family in retribution for a trivial infraction of an unconstitutional law, instead of shooting down defenseless children or young veterans that are trying only to live the American dream, you may find patriots waiting for you that have been pushed to their limit. One day, you will find that you have awakened a sleeping giant, and we the people will indeed hold you accountable for your evil deeds. Hundreds of men, women, and children have died at your hand because of poor information, no information, or just plain overzealous, out-of-control power freaks on an adrenaline high that have no regard for human life. Agents that think their badge is a license to kill with impunity. The difference between you and us is that we will not harm your family as long as they stay out of the fight. I don't want your family to go through what you have put many of ours through. Yes, they will be sad if you don't come home, but when the grieving is over, they will come to understand that you simply chose the wrong side. You see, this is nothing more than a conflict between good and evil. It's that simple, but this is not how it is supposed to be. This is not the America that the Founding Fathers entrusted us with. I implore each of you, before you go to work tomorrow, to take a long, hard look at yourself in the mirror and see if you truly like what you see. If you can look at yourself and be proud of what you've done, or what you may be called upon to do, or more importantly, if you feel that you can walk uprightly before God and look Him in the eye and feel justified in what you have done, then we have nothing further to discuss. But some of you are not really jackbooted thugs. Some of you are simply misguided and feel that you really are doing the right thing. To you, I say, please, follow your conscience, do what you know in your heart is right, for we the people will hold you accountable. That's what I like to see, bullseyes, every time. And you can do the same thing with Beyer Barrels. As long as you do your part, the custom barrels that you get from Beyer Barrels will deliver award-winning accuracy shot after shot. Beyer Barrels specializes in standard and 1-in-9-inch twist match-grade 22 long rifle barrels for the Ruger 10/22 and AR-15. If you want to win, visit their site at BeyerBarrels.com. That's BeyerBarrels.com. Or you can call Clint at 360-374-9476 and tell him you heard it on the Shooting Fence, would you? Let him know that his advertising money is doing him some good.
You have a weapon?
Yeah, a big one. How about you?
You sure you want to get cute with me? You have a backup weapon?
Never had the need.
Get one. Keep that in your suit unless I tell you to take it out. Get yourself a Glock. Lose that nickel-plated sissy pistol.
It was over in a moment and the folks had gathered round. There before them lay the body of the outlaw on the ground. Oh, he might have gone on living, but he made one fatal slip when he tried to match the ranger with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip.
All right, we're back. We're going to get right back into it here. We're sitting here with Lavoie Finicum, who is live right here with us tonight in at the shooting bench. And, Lavoie, you were just about to tell us something. You were just changing subjects when I cut you off there.
I was, you know. So
not changing subjects, but you're going into a different,
right,
phase there.
And so that's kind of laid the groundwork of what's brought me to where I'm at. And what happened, Coop, was that after the standoff at Bundy Ranch, I had to do some soul searching because I became educated. I understood the principles of the Constitution upon which my friend Cliven was standing on. And then I went home and I looked at my actions. And what was I doing? I was signing mandatory terms and conditions with the BLM, and I was paying grazing fees to the BLM. And so I'm looking inside, I'm saying, well, if I honestly believe that the BLM is unconstitutional, why am I bowing down and submitting? Why am I signing these conditions? And why am I paying these fees? And I finally came to the decision that I needed to shut up, sit down, and be quiet, and not cause waves, or I needed to be consistent and no longer pay those fees. And so that's what I did. And I'm a little different than Cliven. Cliven, they were actively trying to take out as a rancher.
Mm-hmm.
But me, I'm in a completely different situation. I've had nothing but perfect relationships with the BLM and my ranch. Never had trespass notice. Always, my cows are fat, my grass is good. I always run well below the allotted numbers that they said I could run. And so I haven't had this fight with them. But all of a sudden I found myself saying, I'm going to have to stand up and do something if I really believe in the Constitution. So that's what I did. I announced it. I announced it on radio down there in southern Arizona, and it kind of caused a stir down there. But what I did, I wrote a letter. I wrote a letter to my range cons that I worked with, honorable man, good man. And this is what I said. I says, you know, Mr. So-and-so, you know, I really appreciate our association that we've had together over the years. In working with my ranch, but I shall no longer need your services. and so I fired them, in essence, and I took the time, because they were good people, to lay out the reasons why that they were unconstitutional. I went to the Constitution, laid out the articles, the section, then I explained how they were also violating the intent of the Constitution by combining all three branches of power, and this without representation. And I enclosed it sincerely. And then I actually wrote a letter, return receipt, to the Solicitor General of the United States. And I made it very simple. Cliven's was much more in depth and did a lot more, but mine was very simple. I said, you know, dear Mr. Solicitor General, I am a rancher in the state of Arizona, Mojave County, and I hereupon am canceling any and all contracts between me and the federal government. And so I fired them. And so I drew a plain and simple line in the sand saying that I no longer recognize the federal government as the owner of these lands. And then I turned around and I made a commitment, and I've contacted my county supervisor and saying, I believe in government. I don't believe in anarchy. And I believe that as a rancher here, that I have a duty to help support my government. And so I'm going to pay a production tax to the Mojave County, which is the proper role of government. That's the government closest to the people. I want to pay you a production tax of 2.5% of my gross. You know, and I called him up and I says, could you please put in place the mechanism to receive this tax? You know, because I want to support my government. And so don't think that I'm trying to be a freeloader and trying to not support my government. But that is the proper role of the government.
Mm-hmm.
The 10th Amendment is what we're upholding. These lands belong to the federal government, or to the states, not the federal government. And the county is that government which is closest to the people. See, thinking that I'm going to vote in a federal election and change the course of our nation is kind of like, to me, is like I'm going to spit in the ocean and raise the tide, the level of the seas. You know,
yeah.
They don't care about me. But, you know, I can pick up the phone and I can get hold of my county commissioner. I did. I can pick up the phone. I can get hold of my county sheriff. And I did. I let him know what I'm doing. And, well, so they actually contacted me this very morning. And they said, well, I'm going to drive 300 miles up there, and I'd like to sit down and visit with you, Mr. Finicum, and with the other rancher and the brand inspector. And I'm not sure where they're going to go. I'm not sure if they're going to uphold the Constitution or if they're going to bow to the federal government and try to bring pressure against me to comply with the BLM. And so we shall see.
You want us to come up there and make sure it's fair fight?
Well, I just want to make sure I walk back out of that building. because I don't take it lightly. You know that you were there. I was there, and everybody that was there that helped got those cows back for Cliven. What were we listed as? What did Harry Reid call us?
Domestic terrorist.
And I
wear that badge proudly.
Right. And not only did he do it once, but he did it several times. Now, we also understand under the NDAA Act that we can be detained indefinitely. Yep. And so I don't take that lightly. You've called me a terrorist, and you can arrest me, and I don't have to get to have representation in a court of law. And so I just want to make sure that any building I step into that I'm going to be able to step back out of. So, yes, any time that I'm in a situation like that, I don't mind having somebody to make sure I'm still standing the next day and walking around breathing free air. So now what happened once I did that, that caused a lot of problems, okay? A concern. A third of the ranchers feel very strongly, just like I do. But there's other ranchers that have worked really well with the BLM in learning how to do this quasi-private public relationship with government, and even though it's in violation of principles of freedom and principles of the Constitution, that we've grown up that way for generations as ranchers working with the BLM. A lot of them say, no, this shouldn't happen. Others say, well, it's working for us. Don't rock the boat. Mm-hmm. So I got a call from a big producer next to me. You know, I'm not a big rancher, this big rancher next to me, he calls me and says, Lavoie, he says, well, first thing he says, how's that bull I sold you? Oh, I like it very well, Mr. So-and-so. It's working real well for me. I like that bull. So, well, that's not really the reason I called. I heard rumblings that you are not going to pay your grazing fee and that you're not going to recognize the federal government as owning the land. And so I took the time, about an hour and a half on the phone, to explain and go through the very steps and the reasons why I did what I did. At the end of it, he says, Lavoie, there's nothing you've said that I can disagree with. He just said, but I just don't know that I can make that same choice. See, this is a big step, because as ranchers, that's everything we have on the line. If I lose this, it's not just my ranch, it's my home, everything I have. You know, I've always wanted to be a rancher, like my dad. You know, he had his little ranch there, and I loved growing up chasing a few cows, and it was always my dream to be a cowboy and to raise my kids like that. And it's taken a lifetime for me to get this ranch, and a lot of struggle. And so everything I have, I stand to lose. And these other ranchers are just the same way. A lot of them just stand to lose a lot more if they make the same stand. So it's a scary thing to all of a sudden say to the federal government, we defy you.
But what don't they get about numbers, though? If there's, you say a third of them you hope are on your side and these other ones are not, don't they understand that if they would get on this side, we have a better chance? If you have one rancher that stands up against the federal government, it's going to be a tough fight.
Right.
If you have five ranchers, it gets a little better.
Yes.
If you have 30 ranchers, we've got a pretty good chance.
Absolutely. You know, Cliven, as I visited with him for quite a bit over this last year and stuff, he said for years, if I could just get 10 ranchers, just 10 to stand, we could lick this thing. And he says, but I've never been able to do it. And so finally you have another rancher in Arizona, me, that's standing with Cliven doing the same thing. Well, guess what? Now it's not just me and Cliven. It's me, Cliven, and a tough rancher up in Utah by the name of Stanton Gleaves. So now what you've got in a year's time, it's tripled from one little rancher in Nevada to three ranchers in three separate states. And I think this is worrying the federal government. In fact, I know it is. I know that different agencies in the state have been being contacted by the BLM I know directly on, you know, what they're going to do with this Lavoie-Finicum out there. And so it's going to be really interesting to see what this meeting a week from next Friday with the county commissioner and stuff to see where it goes from there. So I'm not sure where it is. A lot of people have really offered so much support, and I'm so grateful. I want to, anybody who's listening or anybody that knows of the support that they've offered me, I just want to say thanks. But I don't see anything happening right now. I got my first letter from them, my trespass notice, because I turned out on my range 8 weeks early. Okay, and so they send me this letter saying you're trespassing. You've been trespassing for 10 days. You now owe us $1,450. You got 5 days to get
you.
You
must have me confused with somebody that gives a darn.
Yeah, and so he says you have 5 days to present your butt in our office and pay for this. They didn't actually use that word, but they said you need to be here in 5 days and get this settled up. And mm-hmm. I didn't acknowledge that because I'm not acknowledging them as the owners of the land. What I did acknowledge or what I did do, I sent them a certified letter in response to that because they stole, water in Arizona. And there's a saying that whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting for. I only have one live spring on my ranch, okay? And I have a 100,000-gallon storage tank. Now, I only own 50% of that spring. I have a deed. And a deed's recorded in Mojave County, so it's private property. Well, an environmental group came in, and they bought the ranch next to me that had the other half of it, and they turned around and gave it to the BLM. So now the BLM is holding these grazing rights as their own personal ranch. So now me and the BLM are half ownerships in this spring. And so we're catching a little bit of rub. And so we had some range fires out there, and they went and drained that whole 100,000 gallons to fight these fires. Instead of taking their choppers and going and dipping into the Colorado River just a few miles over there, and finally they steal this little bit of water. So half of that water's mine. They arguably say that they own the other half. I say that they don't because they don't have the right to own that stuff. It's mm-hmm. not a fort, a dock, an arsenal, or anything for our national defense. Yep. It's a stupid little spring that flows only 500 gallons a day. And so they stole mm-hmm. stole 45,000 gallons of water. And I'm just a little rancher, and that water is crucial to me. So I write them a letter back, and I say, I don't acknowledge at all their threat that I need to get down there and pay their trespass fees. I simply say, I'm more generous. Instead of giving 5 days, I give them 7. I say, dear Mr. Timothy Burke, that's the director of there, he's the one that wrote the letter. I says, you have stolen 45,000 gallons of water, and I'm giving you 7 days to return that water to me. At the end of 7 days, if you do not return the water to me, I'm going to turn all 100% of that spring onto my ranch. So what I'm doing is I'm taking half of their water. When I go back up there, I'm going to turn half of the water off of the BLM's ranch and onto my ranch. And so we'll just see how that plays out. Now, and I'm going to lay this out because it gets a little tender here. Because what do they do with this ranch that they've gotten, these grazing rights? This is what they do. They call it a grass bank. And they go to ranchers that work well with them. And they say, you know what? If you'll come over here and help us hold this ranch, because what happens is the neighboring ranchers say, you're not grazing this. We're going to open the gates and graze our ranch, our cows on this. And so they need to defend it. So they want to maintain their empire, so they have to defend it. So they go to a rancher and say, if you'll push this other rancher's cows off and keep the fences up, we'll let you graze your cows on here for free. And meantime, we'll go over and help do range improvement on your ranch. And so in this way, they do this working with other ranchers, and they kind of buy their loyalties. Unfortunately, the tender part of this is that's actually my sister. Hmm. So it has caused a great division actually within my own family. A sister and a brother-in-law that I've been close to all my life. They're extremely angry. He's so angry he can't even speak to me. I can't even sit down and talk principles with him because he's so angry with this, because I'm saying the BLM doesn't own this water. I have a deed to the water, and they're giving this to you for free. Where did you buy it? So this is how the government picks winners and losers, and how they grant a dispensation and they buy in loyalty. So they don't want to see what Cliven said. It says that they will use ranchers and grazing boards to first try to force people that are standing for the Constitution. They don't want to get their hands dirty first. And that's what, you know, has happened in the past. And so that's where I'm at with that particular issue. And so you have these three ranchers now that are standing up, and we're hoping to get more. And also, Coop, in saying this, when I actually, and I'm making a call out today, is there any ranchers, any of you that are listening to this, any of you that know of any ranchers that are willing to stand, let us know. Give us a call. Let's get more to stand up. And now what I've just done here, Coop, is I've committed a felony. This is what they convicted the county commissioner with up in San Juan County. It's called conspiracy to commit crime, because I'm calling people to stand up and do something that, according to them, is unlawful, and it's a felony. And the county commissioner did that same thing over a closed right-of-way in his county, where the BLM just came in by fiat, wrote a regulation, says this is no longer a county right-of-way, and nobody can travel down it. And so we've been traveling down it for 180 years. It's a county right-of-way. No, it is not. And so,
not anymore.
Yeah, and so again, you can see where this is tyranny. And well, that's county commissioner Phil Lyman. He organizes what's called the Recapture Canyon Ride. And anyway, the BLM just sits back. They just got their, and it's 30 days after the Bundy standoff. They just got their nose rubbed, so they're not going to do another armed confrontation. But they sit back and they watch, and then they go arrest Phil Lyman and haul him into a federal court, and he gets convicted for conspiracy to commit crime. That's what I've just done.
What did they do to him?
Well, the first thing he did was he didn't weigh the cost of making a stand. And the second thing he did is that he stepped into a federal court. His claim was that he was the county commissioner. This has always been a county right of way. And when they came after him and they hauled him to a federal court, he stepped into it. He should never have stepped into that federal courthouse. He should have made a stand and say, I do not recognize you as the owner of this. I am the county commissioner. This is the county right-of-way. And had he stood, people from all over the country could have come and stood with him. But once he, yep, once he bowed down and once he buckled, the moment he stepped into the federal court, see, this is again combining all three branches of power. Now here's the judicial coming in. You know, the legislative wrote, says no longer a county right of way, nobody can drive there. Then the federal rangers come in, he's arrested, now he's into a federal court. All three branches combined. And he gets convicted. And he should never have stepped in. And so now he's facing to a year in prison and up to $400,000 in fine. Just because somebody behind a desk wrote a statute. Nobody elected that person. We had no representation. And he had and I've talked to him, and I've tried to convince him to stand up, you know. And this is what I said to him. I said, Phil, I says, you know, I appreciate your effort to down there to try to bring attention that this is the county owns these lands, and this is a county right of way. He wasn't even fighting for the ownership of the land. He was just fighting for the access through this right of way.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, now, Phil, I says, if you'll do this thing, says, once you stepped in that county courthouse, you told the federal government that indeed they have the right to sit in judgment upon you as the county commissioner. And I said, now, Phil, if you'll do this, you're the county commissioner. On the day that you're sentenced, to be sentenced in a federal courthouse, if you'll go down there with a county loader, because you're the county commissioner, rip that gate off that county right away and go and drop that gate on the federal courthouse and say, I defy you. That is a county right away. I am the legal and elected government here in this, and I will not comply. People from all over the country, Coop, would go and stand beside him.
Yep.
I told him, I said, Phil, I'll jump my horse in, my horse trail, and I'll run up there, and I'll stand right beside you. I said, people from all over the country will come and stand beside you.
I can poop in one of them's britches right now.
Yeah, absolutely. But that, again, goes back to what I talked to the very beginning. Nobody will stand with you if you don't stand.
Yeah.
God can't stand with you if you don't stand. And don't stand and then sit down. It's worse. It sets a precedent. You know, count the cost. The cost may be dear. It may be everything. It may be your life. Okay? But unless we're willing to value freedom more than our lives, do we really deserve freedom?
Nope.
And this is a story I share with people. I hold freedom so dear. You know the Battle of Trenton, where George Washington crossed the Delaware,
yeah,
where he finally had his first victory. Well, do you know that in that battle he had about 150 wounded, but no fatal casualties, but no fatalities in that actual battle. But he did lose two soldiers. Two soldiers froze to death before they ever got there. They never even had a chance to burn their powder, and they died to give us freedom. I don't even know their names. I don't even know if their names are recorded. It's just recorded that two froze to death to get there. You could see their bloody footprints in the snow going to Trenton. They gave that price to help give us freedom. And what have we done? We have let it slip away. And if we think that we're going to get it back without a similar price, I think we're mistaken. And if we don't value it the same way they valued it, we don't deserve it. We don't deserve it.
Nope. Sure don't. I just got a message here to let you know, and I'd already told you this, but just to let you know that there are people in Washington that will be here if need be. And I know there's people in Utah that will be here if need be. I know there's people in New Mexico that will be here right away. So, and, of course, people in here in Arizona. So.
And I want everybody to know that's listening that I don't take that lightly, because what more can a person give than his life? And so, you know, nothing's happening right now. And so I want to kind of pull the reins in just a little bit. You know, they're not flying helicopters over me like Bundy did and shooting his cows, shooting my cows, and they're not trying to round up things. You know, things will have to run their course. You know, I know that they're worried, and I know that now that three ranchers are doing this, and I'm putting out a call to other ranchers that they're going to have to deal with it. And I want them to have to deal with it. I want us as American citizens to uphold the Constitution. We're about the rule of law. We're about saying to our federal government, return to the confines of the law. Allow the states uphold the 10th Amendment. These lands belong to the states. Let that government closest to the people govern. And, you know, and now on these public lands, I need to clarify this. There's different rights upon it. See, now, I as a rancher, and this is very important, and I should have pointed this out earlier. I as a rancher, I only own the forage rights, the grass. That's my private property. I don't own the mineral rights. That belongs to the miner. You know, a miner can't come in here and say, man, you know, there's a lot of good grass here, and bring in a herd of sheep, because that's my right. And I can't say, wow, that's a nice breccia pipe. I'll bet you there's a good uranium load down there. And I can't stake a claim on that if he already has a claim on it. I can't put a mine down there. That mineral right belongs to the miner. Now, neither I nor the miner own the hunting rights. That belongs to the hunter. Nor can I or the miner or anybody else there limit the right to access. That belongs to the people. See, there's different rights upon the land. The right to reclimate, the right to camp, to hunt. You know, the right for me to run my cows, the right for the miner to reclaim the minerals. And what the government has done, they have seized it, and they start closing the roads. A new sign shows up right there on my ranch. This road down here is closed from November to such and such date. Well, where do they get the authority of that? Did we have ever? No, just a bureaucrat behind the desk says this road is now closed. And I have a federal ranger here with a gun that will stop you. Okay, and if you get down there on that road, that federal ranger with his gun will stop you, and he'll write you a ticket, or he'll arrest you and haul you in, and you go into a federal court. Again, tyranny. All three branches of power combined in one with no representation. This is what we're trying to teach the American people. It's time to uphold the Constitution.
There's a quote. I hate to read this again because I just read this to the guys on the show here not very long ago. But this is, and you may have heard this. Matter of fact, I think I just read it maybe last night. But this is my favorite quote that is non-church related. It says, And I know everybody's going to hate me for reading this again because I'm real fond of this quote. But it says, "And how we burned in the camps later, thinking, what would things have been like if every security operative, when he went out at night to make an arrest, had been uncertain whether he would return alive and had to say goodbye to his family. Or if during periods of mass arrest, as for example in Leningrad when they arrested a quarter of the entire city, people had not simply sat there in their lairs, paling with terror at every bang of the downstairs door and at every step on the staircase, but had understood they had nothing left to lose, and had boldly set up in the downstairs hall an ambush of half a dozen people with axes, hammers, pokers, or whatever else was at hand. The organs would have very quickly have suffered a shortage of officers and transport, and notwithstanding all of Stalin's thirst, the cursed machine would have ground to a halt. If we didn't love freedom enough, and even worse, and even more, we had no awareness of the real situation." This last sentence says it all. Said we purely and simply deserved everything that happened afterwards. I love that quote.
I've never heard that before, but that is so true. And I fear, Coop, that that's in a small measure, maybe a large measure, where we're at as a nation. Why do we keep complying? Why do we keep bowing down? Do we or do we not believe that we have inalienable rights? If we believe that we have inalienable rights, that means they cannot be separated from us. So why do we let them be separated from us? You know, we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, the first law of nature is the right to self-defense. And so that's a natural right. The Constitution doesn't give us the right to keep and bear arms. All it does is codify it. And so when a law is passed and says you can only have 7 bullets in a magazine, well, who's the law abider and who's the law breaker? The man with 8 bullets in the magazine, or the police officer and the legislature who enforces that? It's not the man with 8 bullets in the magazine. That's a natural right. That's a natural law. And they are the lawbreakers. They are the anarchists. And so we need to begin to help teach people who are the law abiders and who are the lawbreakers. And in, when you really begin to look at the natural rights, which is the basis of our Constitution, we begin to see very clearly all those who are lawbreakers. And unfortunately, there's so many good people that in our law enforcement community that feel that, you know, it's the law. It's what's called the Nuremberg defense. Mm-hmm. I'm just following. I wish I could say it in German, but I can't. But it's, I'm just following orders. Well, wait. That's not a good enough defense. If it's in nature not lawful, don't enforce it. And if you can't not enforce it and still be part of the law enforcement, then you need to get out. But I think you could be in part of law enforcement and say, I'm not going to enforce, you know, just because you're as long as you're not violating another person's life, liberty, or property. Your right to keep and bear arms should never be infringed. And the moment that it is infringed, when you're not threatening another's life, liberty, and property, that person who is enforcing to take that from you or confine you, he is the lawbreaker. And we need to understand that. We need to live that way.
You know, there's a couple of law enforcement officers they're in Navajo County, actually, you know, used to get in trouble because they would refuse to give tickets for certain things like seat belts. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's up to you.
Yeah.
If you don't wear a seat belt, don't wear a seat belt.
That's right.
And it's not anybody's right to tell you that you have to wear a seat belt in your own car. And of course, they talk about if you don't, there's the expense to the county if nobody claims you or nobody, you know. Well, if nobody does, then just shove him off in a ditch somewhere, and don't worry, it's not your responsibility.
Get a cardboard box, it's pretty cheap.
Yep.
You know, and dig a hole, it's not that much, you know.
Yep.
You know, you can get somebody that needs a job and give them a spade, and you dig that hole, and it doesn't cost that much to put somebody in the ground. And I want to go to this law enforcement thing a little bit. In Utah, the Stanton Gleaves actually has county commissioners in certain, he ranches in 5 separate counties. That's how big he is. he actually has county commissioners and sheriffs that are standing behind him. See, there's certain places on his ranch he's getting ready to turn in, and the BLM says, you can't turn in here. Got the county commissioners and the county sheriff behind him says, we're turning in here. And the BLM says, well, it didn't need to go this far. We can work this out. And they back off. But see, this is where the proper role of government, the local law enforcement, the local elected officials, they are to intercede in between us and the federal government. They need to protect us from the federal government. I need to be able to look towards my Mojave County Sheriff to protect my ranch. You know, that's his responsibility. Whether he does or not, I'm not sure. But that's his responsibility, and I'm putting him on notice to do that. Whether he does, it will rest upon his own shoulders. Certain sheriffs do that, and God bless them for it.
Yeah, there's not nearly enough of them.
Yeah.
Nearly enough.
I take my hats off to those that have the courage to do it, because it takes courage.
There's, this same discussion here, I've talked to people on the show about it before, and that is things like speeding tickets.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that you can't get across to people that are not truly liberty-minded, and that is the fact that speeding tickets are not legal. They're revenue generators,
mm-hmm.
and once you know how to deal with it, they're real easy to get out of. Real easy to get out of.
Why should we have victimless crimes?
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing. That's when you go and you get this ticket, then you go to court and you go get the officer on the stand and ask him if he has issued you a valid course of action.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he's going to say yeah, because he thinks that's the speeding ticket, that's a valid course. That has nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
The valid course of action is a three-part deal, and one is, did I violate your constitutional rights? Did I harm you or put you in harm's way? And is this redressable by the courts? Well, the speeding tickets and stuff are redressable by the courts. But if you wasn't standing out in the middle of the street on the white line when I went screaming by, I didn't put your life in danger, and it has nothing to do with your constitutional rights.
Yeah, who's the victim?
Exactly.
Yeah, there's no victim. See, we're trying to, as a society, trying to make be preemptive and make everybody be good. You know, you might shoot somebody with that eighth bullet, so you can only have seven in your magazine. How much sense does that make?
Absolutely zero.
Right, and so it's not, and we all know it's about control. You know, it's that the two forces are liberty or tyranny. And those are the two things that are coming to a head here. And I'm feeling, Coop, you know, from my experiences, that there's beginning to become a groundswell of American citizens that are done. That they're ready to say, I do no longer care what your statute says or what your law says.
I do not recognize your authority anymore.
Right, that I have not injured anybody. I'm not putting anybody's life at risk. I'm not threatening anybody's property. Leave me alone. Don't bother me. And that's what I'm saying. You leave Arizona alone. You leave Mojave County alone. You leave my cows alone. These are my grazing rights. They do not belong to you. And so in my little place, on my little ranch, I'm trying to do my part in upholding the Constitution. See, I wasn't oppressed, as I said earlier. I wasn't persecuted. You know, things were going swimmingly for me. I mean, I'm kind of a prepper at heart, and the prepper mindset is just keep your head down and don't make a target on yourself and wait till the lights go out and you'll be okay. And so that's what I was doing. I was just simply going along, making sure that I wasn't causing any waves, and trying to lay in some food and things that my family would need, and prepare for times when they might get hard. And now I'm making a target on myself, because mm-hmm. I know that we're losing our freedoms. And if I don't stand, how can I stand with those two guys that froze to death going to Trenton?
Yep.
I could not hold up my head if I didn't do my part. And I don't want to stand in the same room or be like that cowboy or that so-called cowboy that rode the other way.
That wannabe.
I want to be able to stand there I don't need to say anything, but I at least don't want to have to bow my head in shame. You know, I don't need to be at the forefront. I don't need any recognitions, but I just would like to be there when they stand, because I know there's going to be a day accounting between us and God.
Yep.
And what did we do with this gift of liberty? Did we let it just slip away, or did we do all we could to preserve it? And too many people. See, I've had a string of people from the. It's been probably a couple of months since I've fired the BLM, and since then I've had a string of good people through my home, saying, "Lavoie, what are you doing? Are you sure you want to do this?" Some will say this. We agree with you, but we don't think it's time. You're too soon. And
when exactly is that time?
Well, I'm trying to figure that out. If it's not now, is it when they start building a concentration camp? If not now, when? If not here, where?
If we'd done it before, we wouldn't have to now.
That's right. If we'd done it before, the battle would be easier. But we've allowed this concentration of power. We've allowed this empire to rise up within our country, and we have got to put it back in its box. And it's going to be hard. But by dang, you got to do it. You got to do it.
There's, people. You are the reason that people in Scotland wear kilts.
Okay.
It's because what you're carrying doesn't fit in regular trousers.
Well, I don't know about that. I'm not sure this is what my wife wants me to say. She helps keep me grounded, but actually I have to take my hat off to my wife. She's been she's been very supportive of this. She'll say to me, I'm very scared about what might happen to us, because this could end very poorly for me. But that's okay. I mean, we only have so many days upon this earth.
Let's on the other side.
That's right. We'll see you on their side. Yeah. Yeah, see you on their side.
Well, my wife's the same way. She's not as involved as I am, but she supports everything that I do. Mm-hmm. There's some women here on the chat room that I know personally, that I've been around, that are every bit as on board as we are, as my wife and your wife is. Mm-hmm. We're not alone.
Yeah.
There's people out there that and there's getting to be more of them. Mm-hmm. You know, if we can keep this education train on the tracks just a little while longer, we're starting to get enough people now where, you know, we're backing the feds down every once in a while, where they're realizing, they say, wow, these damn people have been studying, and now they know things that we didn't want them to know.
Yes, and they're
using it,
and they're showing the courage to stand. You know, it's one thing to know; it's another thing to stand, and so now you're combining the two. People with knowledge and people with courage.
Yep.
And that's what it will take. And I do believe that we pull this off. I think it's going to cost us dearly. But I believe down in my heart we will preserve these principles in the Constitution.
Well, you and I know that we will.
Yes.
We know that we will prevail. Yeah. We also know it's not going to be easy. And we may not see the product of what happens here. But we already know that we're gonna make it.
Yeah, I do believe that.
It may be a long, hard. It will be a long, hard struggle.
You know, I wrote a book a couple weeks ago. I'm actually gonna, if it's okay, make a little plug for
Please.
That. I wrote a book a couple years ago as I watched the freedom in our country diminish. And the left is so good about moving their cause at the emotional level. You don't think, you know, it's for the kids.
No.
Well, if it's for the kids, we better do it, you know. And so they move things at an emotional level. And so I wanted to try to move the cause of freedom. And so I tried to do it at an emotional level. So I wrote a novel. It's about a family trying to come together in a time of national crisis. It's kind of one of these end of times books. And what I've done in the book is I've tried to showcase the rights of the individual against the collective. In other words, in times of crisis, does the collective then have a right against the personal property of a man? And it's about a man trying to pull his family together in this time. And I wrote the book in a way that there's a lot of moral dilemmas that a man has to face. And he has to make hard choices. And a lot of my family members who are very like-minded to me have read the book, and each of them will fall on different sides of the issue. So, well, the man can't do that, that can't do that. And others say, oh, yeah, that's okay. And so the book puts hard decisions that we're all going to face as individuals, I believe, sometime probably not too far down the road. And it causes us to debate those. What is morally right? When is a man justified in using force and protecting what is his own? And the name of the book is a very cheery title. It's called Only by Blood and Suffering, Regaining Lost Freedoms. And it just got published just recently. I'm doing really well on Amazon. It's running 5 stars out of 5 stars, and so I'm real happy about that, feeling very blessed. And it's on Kindle. And so,
oh, it is available on Kindle?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just saw somebody on the chat room here just a while ago said they just ordered your book before you ever mentioned it.
Tell them thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much. And the reason why I appreciate that so much is that, I'm a little more vulnerable than Cliven is. There's different angles that they can come at me with, and I imagine that they will. And if they do, they do, and I'll handle them the best I can. But I can use this to help finance my fight with the feds, and I'm not going to back down. I'm not going to bend the knee, and so I'm going to ride this horse clear to the end.
Well, there's a number of people here that'll ride that horse with you.
So I appreciate that, and I don't take it lightly.
And we want the feds to know that there are a number of us that'll be there with you. And if it comes to it, then
I think I've never said that on any of the radio shows or anything that I've put out on YouTube, but I think they've got that rumbling from somewhere, because I know that I'm getting the feedback through back channels that they're kind of concerned, and good. They need to know that they're in the wrong. They need to know that they're out of the bounds. They need to know that they're out of the law, and that this land, we're going to uphold the 10th Amendment, and we're going to require them to return to the confines of the Constitution.
You know, people listening need to understand, or people in, you know, they're listening to the podcast and everything. And by the way, the podcast will be up later tonight. I'll get that done right away. They need to understand that we are not anarchist.
No.
I do not believe in anarchy.
No.
We must have a certain level of government. It's designed that way. The Founding Fathers, I believe, were put here by God. I think they were divinely inspired men that created all this, and I have no problem with that. We just need to make sure that they understand. We're not trying to overthrow them, get rid of them.
No.
We want them to align themselves with the Constitution and with us.
We need them,
and that's all we're looking to do.
We need them. They are there to protect our borders, which they're not doing, obviously. But they're there to protect our country.
Yeah.
They are put there for us. We need them, and I support them in their roles. I do not support them outside of their bounds. I support our states. I support our counties. I believe in government, and they need to know that. And I'm not looking to overthrow things. I'm just saying, return to law. Return to the confines of the law. That's all I'm saying.
We are not anti-government. We are anti-corruption in government.
Yes.
That's. I wish that they would understand that. I wish that people that we associate with and interact with from day to day would understand that. I wish they would understand that the majority of the militias out there are not, as Morris Dees would have you believe, not anti-government. We're anti-corruption in government. We just want the government to be the power of the government to be returned to the people.
Yep.
And abide by the Constitution. It really is that simple. It's really a simple concept.
It is.
It was painfully simple the way it was designed. And they have made it now so overly complicated with the vast, huge, monumental books and stuff that they have of laws and policies and subsections and all this stuff. Who has ever read any of that stuff?
Well, consider this, Coop. We really don't have a representation in government when it comes to law. You've heard of the National Register.
Uh-huh.
This is how laws are passed. 100 and 20,000 pages a year. All they do is they write the statute. They enter into the National Register. After 30, 60, or 90 days, it becomes law. It's never debated. It's never voted on. And nobody can keep up with that. Who can keep up with 120,000 pages per year of new laws? And so all this thing that they have before us is pretty much just to placate us, I believe.
Yep.
You know, it's to give us the facade that we have a representation in our government. And I kind of like that, you know, one of the great love stories when it comes to movies, I think, is called The Gladiator. I thought that was, that's kind of a touching movie to me, between him and his wife and stuff. But he, you know, when Commodus is talking to his sister, he says, "I'm going to do away with the Senate." And the sister says, "No, let them keep their illusions." And I think that's what we have right now. It's just an illusion. We have an illusion of a Senate and of a representative government.
You just sold another book, huh?
Well, thank you. Again, I appreciate it. It's been,
hopefully
been,
it'll help finance the trip down here.
It will. I appreciate coming here, Coop. It's been wonderful.
Well, all right. Well, we have we've used up over an hour and a half here, and if you've got more stuff, we're all ears. If you got more stuff you want to lay out there, well,
I could talk on other subjects, but I think this particular one is the one that is probably going to come to the forefront, and so it's what deals with me particularly is between me and the ranchers, between us ranchers and the BLM, and so that's the issue that I'm trying to draw my line upon.
And what town are you closest to up there? Fredonia?
It is.
Of any consequence at all?
Well,
I know there's not
actually
much there.
There's Colorado City that's actually 5 miles, but we do most of our shopping either in Hurricane, Utah, or Fredonia, Kanab. But I'm in a little community called Cane Beds, Arizona. And my ranch is just 50 miles of dirt road straight south out by Mount Trumbull. And that's where I ranch out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm so far out there, I don't even get cell service out there. So And when I'm out there, you want to feel like being free. You go out there and see, and that's where I get the love of it. I'm out there, I don't see anybody, I got all this elbow room, I'm just riding with my kids, taking care of my cows, and I feel the wind on my face, the smell of the sage, and go, this is the life. I'm living the dream. And
this is what it's all about.
Nobody's right looking over my shoulders, nobody's telling me what to do, and I'm going, everybody should live like this.
Yeah. How far, just looking at future possibilities, how far do you have to go to get cell service? Can you just get up on a hill there and get cell service? Or?
No, you actually will have to come from my ranch about five to 7 miles in closer before you start picking up a cell service towards the highway. So it's about 50 miles from highway out to my ranch, but once you come back off about 5 miles, you start getting a weak signal and a little bit better as you get in closer. And so, you know, that's an issue that I deal with is that, you know, it's kind of like the old days, you know, you're out there on your own.
Well, that's where shortwave radio comes in.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't even think of that. I was thinking about smoke signals.
You would do very well to look into high frequency radio. Actually, you could probably get away with VHF radio from there.
Okay.
I would think about it like this right here.
Oh, you know, I really do. I really need to do something like that.
That would give you communications. Yeah. We need to talk about that. We need to get you set up.
Yeah.
It's not very expensive. Yeah. And,
I had a, you know, it was just 2 summers ago. I was breaking a colt and was bringing in some cows, and it went to bucking on me, and about the fourth one, it did a high dive up in there and just came down over on top of me, and I was lucky that I was able to miss the horn and stuff, but it laid me out there, and I was just there with my daughter, and, you know, and I laid there on the ground bleeding while she had to, you know,
she's
a cool turkey, and she ran the horse miles way down to go get a truck and then try to load me in and get me to a hospital. And so sometimes you're way out there.
Yeah, I know you're coming into the 21st century kicking and screaming.
It's hard.
Communications is a damn sure a vital
I heard this thing about these mirrors.
Taking a mirror with a little hole drilled in the middle of it.
I've heard about that.
Yeah, I think we need to. I think we need to talk about getting you set up, especially looking at the situation that you have now.
Yeah.
there needs to be some other choices there.
I agree with that. And I appreciate everybody's support and stuff. Everybody just kind of hold their horses a little bit. Nothing's really happened. It could be very slow developing. But I will keep everybody updated via my YouTube post and things like that. I created a web page, One Cowboy Stands for Freedom, where I keep all my YouTube posts. But you can just go to One Cowboy Stands for Freedom and on YouTube, and you can see all my YouTube videos there, and just get the latest one. And I'll try to keep everybody updated with that. I don't. There's so many people that have responded. I don't. My wife tries to get me to respond, but I can't keep up with everything.
Yeah, you can't keep up with all of them. You know, I tried for a long time, and I was just up all night trying to answer every single email and everything. I just can't do it.
But
we get on mediums like this, and we say, look, all of you, we really appreciate what you're doing. But,
and I do. Thank you. But, everybody, thank you.
It's hard to do individually. Well, you've got a lot of support here. And Jeanette, I'm not sure what you're saying there. I'm not sure what you mean. So enlighten me with your wisdom there a little bit. But anyway. Okay, well, we've got your book, your website. Did you have what was your website address? It was
I think it's onecowboystandforfreedom.
.com or?
Yeah, .com. Okay. I think so.
All right, well. Jeanette just put it on there, onecowboystandforfreedom.com.
Yeah, she tried to keep me lined out.
Yeah, it looks like you've got at least a couple of family members in here.
Oh,
listening to you.
So. Good, yeah. That's what this is about, Coop. It's about our families.
Yeah.
You know, I want my children to grow up and breathe free air. That's what I want. And I'm willing to give my life for that.
Yeah, and it's a shame. I mean, it's great that you've been able to raise your kids the way you did. There's a lot of kids out there that just don't get it. Mm-hmm. If it's past the games and the parties and the dances and the ball games and all that stuff, you know, it just doesn't register for them. And I feel sorry for those kids, and I feel sorry for their families, and I feel sorry for a whole freaking generation here. A couple of generations, actually.
I feel for our country.
Yeah.
Where our country is going to go through some tight corners, and it's going to cost us dearly, but we will get through it. We just hold on.
Well, I hate to cut this one short. I'm trying to find something else to talk about here.
It's been fun. I have. You know, we could spend a lot of time talking about a lot of other issues, but I think it'd kind of detract from my central thing that I'm trying to do. I'd love to talk about guns, and I'd like to talk about, you know, preparedness. I love to talk about prepping. I love to talk about that and try to encourage people to be prepared. You know, there's so many things that my kids have done. I've got a daughter that is in a wilderness program where she helps troubled teens, and they're out 14 days without coming in. And everything they eat, they pack on their back. Mm-hmm. And so I've learned from her how to pack lightly the foods that you get the most mileage out of with the least amount of weight and stuff. And, you know, a lot of things are theoretical, but once you start doing it in actual practicality, then you learn more and stuff. So
yeah, I'll have to introduce you to survival tabs here. I had a bottle of them sitting right here, and I carried them out to the truck.
Okay.
I'll have to.
Well, maybe someday we can do an update, and we can do a segment on prepping.
Yeah.
And share things back and forth.
Or guns. Guns.
Oh, yeah. Both. Yeah, I think they go together, don't they?
Yeah, typically Thursday night is our... we try to do mostly gun-related stuff on Thursday nights.
Okay.
And it gets harder and harder, though. There's just so much stuff going on with the country and in the news that we've... It kills my Thursday night show because there's just some things that are timely, and if you want to get up there and get on top of it right away, we can't put it off another day or till Monday or whatever. So anyway, all right, Lavoie Finicum, thank you very much for coming with us. You've got a lot of support here. A lot of people are chomping at the bit and wanting you to come back. So maybe we'll try to arrange that here in the not too distant future.
I will. You know, if things really begin to break. I'll come back in and we'll do another hour or hour and a half, and I'll give everybody a detailed update on where things are going in progressing with the ranchers standing up for the 10th Amendment and for the Constitution.
All right. Well, that's what we're all about, and that's what the shooting bench is about, and we appreciate you joining us, sir. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Shooting Bench. Please join Cope Monday through Friday for the most politically incorrect firearms information show on talk radio.
Lead, follow, or get the hell out of the way. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for you to decide who you are. Somebody should call them. Somebody should write a letter. Somebody should try and stop that. Somebody should do something. I challenge you to look in the mirror and tell me what you see. If there's somebody there, that would be you. It's time for you to do something. There is no doubt that the Constitution is hanging by a thread. It's not going to wait for us much longer.